Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen, and with me are
Devendra Hartwar
and Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today on the Slash Filmcast, we got some what we've been watching for you, and then we're going to move on into an in-depth review of El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, which is out right now on Netflix. You can tune into more episodes of the Slash Filmcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. And thanks to our sponsors for bringing this week's episode to you, Villains, Feels, and Native are three sponsors this episode that are allowing us to bring the Slash Filmcast to you for free. So let's get into what we've been watching this week. I want to just talk briefly about something I've been watching, a documentary series called Living Undocumented. Have you guys heard about this? It's on Netflix right now. Any of you heard Living Undocumented? Yeah. It's a docuseries that debuted pretty recently, and it essentially follows the lives of, I think it's like eight immigrant families who have been impacted by U.S. immigration policy, mostly by Trump immigration policy, but also like from Trump's predecessors as well, some like Barack Obama and Bill Clinton policies that have impacted some of the families here. And I think everyone should watch this movie, or this series, I should say. Everyone, you know, whether you are...
Is it going to rip my heart out?
It will. It totally will. I mean, whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative, support Trump, don't support Trump, whatever it is, I think you should watch this movie because you should see the impact that U.S. immigration policy has on people, you know, and on normal, everyday families. Now, the series, in my opinion, clearly has a point of view on the justice or justness of U.S. immigration policy, and you know, you may share that opinion, you may disagree with that opinion, but I think it's trying to convey this idea that like the policy is destroying the lives of people who are really people who meaningfully contribute to U.S. society, and that these are not people who we should like dedicate our resources to ruining their lives, which is what's happening. Like that's kind of my perspective on what the position of the show is. But regardless, I think if the, you know, if our country is doing something to people, whether it's going to war with people, whether it's deporting people, whatever is happening, I think it's like, it's worth it to know what the impact on people is. And I think it is, despite having a position, it's fairly even-handed in how it approaches this topic. There's some very like moving interviews. There's a lot of great kind of tape that these filmmakers were able to be there during crucial moments of these people's lives. And so just from a documentary filmmaking perspective, it's really impressive. And yeah, I think everyone should watch it. So the show is Living Undocumented, the multi-part series on Netflix. It's just a really solidly made documentary. And particularly as we're heading into an election year coming up, I think it's just important for people to know the impact of what they're – like they might not have voted for these policies, but they voted – people voted for people that put these policies into place. And you should just know that this is what's going on. So I'd recommend Living Undocumented. It's on Netflix right now. Jeff, is this something you're going to watch? What do you think?
I definitely would be interested to watch it for sure. I just, you know, living in Los Angeles, it's a big, big topic for me. And it's one, we employ a nanny who is here legally. In fact, her sister just arrived on Sunday and will be living with her sister. And she had been apart for multiple years as her sister went through the process of coming over here legally. It is a grueling and difficult process that has only gotten more difficult in the last couple of years. But you know, it is interesting. I, as knowing her in the last few years, because she's been our nanny, has made me even more interested in the topic of immigration and legal versus illegal and the kinds of people and the desperation and the struggles that coming to this country entail. I would be very interested to see it, but I do feel like I would be a puddle on the floor by the end of it.
I don't disagree with you, but I do think it's worth watching, and I think it's important to watch.
Yeah.
I think the only other thing I'll mention, you know, since you're talking about it, is there is this whole idea out there that people who come into this country who are undocumented, like they don't want to this is a talking point in conservative media that like these people don't want to assimilate, they don't want to contribute to society. Many of the families in this show like pay their taxes, they want to make their communities better, they don't commit crimes, and I think one thing that also comes across is people who go through the naturalization process, I would argue, appreciate citizenship more than people who were born here, or many of them.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Because like when you've had to like fight for every step of the way to become a citizen, I just don't understand how that cannot give you a greater appreciation of citizenship than never needing to think about it at all in your whole life. You know, like it just, it's something that I think is a common misconception that a lot of these undocumented immigrants like don't appreciate being an American. And I think this docuseries does a lot to correct that point of view. So it's Living Undocumented. It's on Netflix right now. Check
you know
it
something,
out.
Yeah. Not to go too off on a tangent here, but I was thinking recently that I've never conceptualized myself as a second generation American, but I am one. I've never thought about it in those terms, but my grandfather was born in Italy, and so that would make my father first generation, right?
Well, yeah. Assuming your father immigrated to the United States, which is that the case?
My grandfather immigrated.
Oh, your grandfather immigrated. I got
so that makes my dad first generation, right? Yes. Right? Because he's first generation born here.
I think
that's how that works.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm either second or third.
Yeah,
I think second
or third.
But you can actually see the link to somewhere else, which I think is important, because what's really funny is that, certain media that likes to, I don't know, rail against immigrants. I don't know what some of those folks did to actually fight to earn, you know, their citizenship in America. That's kind of tough.
Yeah. So it's an illuminating film. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of documentaries here on the Slash Filmcast. And there's some that I'm like, oh, I think this is a great topic. But I think the documentary is only okay. But the topic is so good, it doesn't matter. Right. There's been many of those. This is actually, I think, a great topic. And the documentary is well made, you know. So I'm happy to recommend it. Again, Living Undocumented on Netflix. Jeff Cannata, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I have just started the third season of a show on Amazon that my wife and I have enjoyed the first two seasons of quite a bit, called Goliath. It stars Billy Bob Thornton as a sort of alcoholic defense attorney, defense attorney, corporate attorney, who takes down these big Goliaths, these huge cases, huge, you know, class action lawsuits type deal against massive companies. A little guy suing the big guy. And the first two seasons we found very enjoyable and interesting, a funny, interesting group of characters. And the plots are cool mysteries and have some big twists. And I just started the third season, which premiered recently, early October. And we've only gotten a couple of episodes in. But one of the things I really like about this show, first of all, they tend to get, you know, one-off season big guest stars, not guest stars, but there's guest season long cast members. You know, the first season had William Hurt, and this season has Dennis Quaid, and you know, it's cool to see big cast like that, big cool actors playing against each other like that, and it is also a show that isn't afraid to get real weird. Real weird. First season, William Hurt played a character who like had to be in the dark all the time because he had a weird condition.
I'm remembering those scenes now. That was
second
insanity.
Season had Mark Duplass as a character who like fetishized about dismemberment and losing limbs. You know, it gets real weird.
They're doing the Dexter thing, basically.
Yeah. And then this season, it's like they went, let's just go for it. Because, like I said, I'm only two episodes in. The whole season's out because it's an Amazon release kind of deal. So maybe people have watched more than I at this point. But the thing that I like about the show is that it starts off with these wacky, almost science fiction-y, X-Files-y type beginnings and then explains them in the most rudimentary way. It's all explained. It's all very easily explained, and it ends up having a very mundane, you know, reason for it. This one starts in a super genre sci-fi way, and we have people like doing crazy drugs and having wild visions that, like, Dennis Quaid, 400 Dennis Quaids all singing a song. It's just like, what is this show right now? But I'm totally assuming that it's going to come around and make sense at some point. But boy, right now, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I kind of love the chutzpah of that, you know, just the sort of going so far afield and then, like, the whole season is reeling me back in. But season two had one of the best single episodes of a show ever. This sort of bottle episode where Billy Bob Thornton, like, gets kidnapped by these people and has to break out of this strange room. It kind of reminded me of that episode in Barry season two as well, where it's just like this wacky escapade of chaos. So I'm fully expecting season three to be great. Right now, I just don't know what to make of it.
Jeff, have you watched Bosch yet?
No, my
dad, Jeff, like, yeah, the official dad show recommendation is Bosch. Jeff, you will love the hell out of Bosch. Okay. Everybody watch Bosch. It's great. The Wire alumni are in Bosch.
Talking about a dad recommendation, literally my father-in-law like can't stop talking about Bosch, and he's like, you guys have to watch Bosch.
I know. We have a Facebook group, and all we do is talk about Bosch.
All right, well, that's Goliath Season 3 and also Bosch, and both of them are available on Amazon Prime Video. Devendra, what have you been watching?
Just quickly, I wanted to mention Primal, which is the new TV series from Genndy Tartakovsky, the creator of Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack. He's worked on so many things. He's back making an original 2D animated show. And I kind of love this thing. It is a brutal series set in prehistoric times about a caveman. Something very bad happens to him, and he teams up with a dinosaur who something very bad also happens to. It is like violent. It is cruel in a way. Like, it is a show that I think it balances like the beauty of I don't know. It tries to be poetic at times, but it's also like very much aware that life back then probably would have been hardcore and brutal, and, you know, get used to seeing the people you love die super easily. It's has no dialogue, which I think is a really interesting thing, right? Because it's this is pre-language. This is just a caveman trying to figure life out and a dinosaur that can't talk. And I think the animation is fantastic. The look of the show is great. I love Genndy Tartakovsky's 2D animation. This reminds me a lot of his he did the Star Wars Clone Wars cartoons before they went CG. He did a series of animated things around the prequels, and I loved those things. So this is, you know, he's kind of doing that again. Great action, great set pieces, a great use of 2D animation. It's worth checking out. It's on Adult Swim right now.
So that is Primal. And it's on Adult Swim, and very cool. Like, that's bold to have, like, a movie.
It's bold. He's a bold guy. I love him.
A show that doesn't have, like, dialogue, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's done this before. There have been Samurai Jack episodes that have been mostly dialogue-free. If you haven't seen the Clone Wars cartoons, it is worth watching. There's one starring Mace Windu with no dialogue. And it's just Mace Windu messing up stormtroopers and destroying giant, you know, ships all on his own with the power of the Force. It still looks fantastic today.
Very cool. Well, again, that's Primal. It's available on Adult Swim right now. And speaking of things that are violent and brutal, boy, do we have a sponsor for you today. Jeff, do you want to tell our listeners about Villains?
Absolutely. You know, we're a bunch of heroes here on the Slash Film Cast.
In our own minds. Yep.
I think it's pretty universally acknowledged that we are heroes. But the world is full of villains. And some of those villains are real. Some of those villains are fictional. If only there was a podcast that told you about all of them. Oh my gosh, there is our new sponsor, Villains, the new podcast from the Parcast Network. talking about villains, talking about.
I kind of like the way you said that, Jeff.
Parcast Network.
Villains.
Villains. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm available for parties. It highlights these psychological, political, and emotional factors that spawn villains, both real and fictional. I think I love this idea that they're talking about Darth Vader and the Joker, just like they're talking about Charles Manson and Pablo Escobar. I mean, it is the same stuff. And I think that's a really cool idea where you can relate, you know, these factors that work in fiction and drama and how they're influenced by and influence the real world. It's a really cool thing. So you delve into social influences that lead to character creation for the fictional ones. And for the real ones, you learn the true story of all of their dark deeds and what created them, what drove them to do those things. It's pretty cool. Some are fictional, some are real, but all are villains. Follow Villains for free on Spotify or wherever you get podcasts, or you can visit parcast.com/villains to listen now.
All right, let's get to our review of El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie.
I don't know what to tell you. I ain't said like 500 times already. I have no idea where he is. Don't know where he's headed either. North, south, west, east, Mexico, the moon. I don't have a clue. But yo, even if I did, I wouldn't tell you. Because I've been watching the news same as everybody else. I seen that little cage of his they kept him in. I heard about what all they did to him to make sure he kept cooking. So sorry. I don't know what to tell you. No way I'm helping you people put Jesse Pinkman back inside a cage.
That was from the trailer for El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. I'm going to read a plot summary of this movie from IMDb. A sequel of sorts to Breaking Bad, following Jesse Pinkman after the events captured in the finale of Breaking Bad. Jesse is now on the run as a massive police manhunt for him is in operation. So, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I almost shat myself when I saw a trailer for this movie. Because, I mean, that trailer dropped like 2 to 3 months ago. You know, it was not that long ago, right? So it wasn't like, hey, coming in 2022, a Breaking Bad movie. It's like, hey, this movie that you didn't even know existed, that you didn't even know anyone was filming.
Yeah, you didn't even know you wanted it. You weren't even begging for it. Now here it is.
Now it's going to be.
The algorithm heard you.
Not only does it exist, it's going to be here in like 2 months. Which is an amazing reflection of our times. I mean, it's so interesting that we live in a time where this movie can exist, right?
I agree 100%.
Because, right, the reason this movie exists is because Breaking Bad was on Netflix for a while, and being on Netflix helped propel the show to huge heights of popularity. I mean, the show was on AMC, and it's one of those rare shows that actually the audience grew from year to year. And by the end, it was wildly popular. Like, I think over 10 million people were watching every episode. And it was so popular that Netflix is like, hey, we're going to get the rights of Breaking Bad to be able to make a movie that is a continuation of the plot of what happened at the end of Breaking Bad, the series. We're going to be able to call it a Breaking Bad movie, and we're going to release it simultaneously to all of our viewers, which is what they did last week. And now everyone can watch this story that is set in the Breaking Bad universe that's a direct continuation of the events of the series finale. Now, one thing...
Who would have thought that the IP that could do both a prequel and a sequel effectively
would be Breaking Bad. Would be Breaking Bad. Not something I would have
Who would have predicted that?
I think for me, there's two questions when we come to this movie, right? One of them is something that Dan Trachtenberg once said to me a long time ago when I was making The Primary Instinct, my film with Stephen Tobolowsky, is he said something about like the film. He said, like, this thing that you're doing in this film takes a complete thought and makes it incomplete, right? And so he's like, don't do this thing that you're going to do, and I ended up not doing it. And so one question I had was like, does El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie,
man,
take a complete thought and make it incomplete? You know, does it
a phenomenal question.
Right.
That is the perfect question for this movie.
Agreed. Agreed. And so that's one question. Another question I have is like, does it justify its existence? And what I mean by that is, like, is the story important enough? Is it, does it feel essential enough that when you're watching it, you're like, I am glad this exists. It should exist because without it, I would be missing a fundamental piece of the puzzle that is Breaking Bad, right? Like that without this thing, I like my life would have been worse off if I hadn't watched this movie, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, they're kind of similar questions, but like one is like, does it in any way negatively impact Breaking Bad by making it incomplete? And separate question, like, does it in and of itself justify its existence as a standalone film? So, wow. Devendra, your thoughts on those questions. Do you feel like it takes a complete thought, makes it incomplete? Do you feel like it justifies its existence?
I don't think it creates an incomplete thought, I guess. Like, to me, this is the complete thought. Because I did not like the Breaking Bad finale. We talked about this a bit. I think Ozymandias, the second to last episode, directed by Rian Johnson, is a far better episode of Breaking Bad and a far better way to like kind of end that story. Whereas the actual finale felt like a lot of fan service. It felt like unsurprising. It didn't feel really rooted in the character. So I was just not a huge fan. I will say I'm glad this movie exists now, having seen it, because now I can say I like the Breaking Bad finale. Okay, because not the actual episode. To me, this is the Breaking Bad finale. This is the end of the series, or at least like an epilogue of sorts. You know, I was not super excited for this movie. When it was announced, I thought it was cool. But I was not really eager to revisit this world. Certainly not so late, right? We are 6 years past. There's a scene at the beginning of this movie where somebody calls Jesse a teenage retiree, which I found kind of hilarious because it's Aaron Paul today playing that role. You know, there are certain things like that that don't quite work in this movie, but I think it gives us such a great view of Jesse as a character, kind of the trauma of what he went through in the final season, and a really fascinating and introspective glimpse into where he's headed. And it's not a movie that's focused on like giant shootouts. There's no robotic machine gun in this one, right? There's no like there's violence, but it's not big. It's not a grand scale thing. It is quiet and smart and intelligent in the way the show always was, and so rooted deeply in characters in their emotional truth. So I love this movie, and for me, this is the real ending of the show.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on El Camino?
Well, Dave, I guess the answers to your questions
wow.
are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Wow.
The show's ending was satisfying and clean. Did we need additional scenes? I guess I don't care because being back there makes me nostalgic for 2013.
Very nice, Jeff. Very nice.
Thank you. I think that the framing of that question is perfect, and my answer to it is I don't care, which is weird, right? I think it's the perfect question to ask, and I do think that it sort of undoes a complete thought, but it's such a weird movie, and I guess we will talk a little more in spoilers, but it basically just is an ellipsis to get to the same thought. It's just filling in some more information and doing it in a very entertaining way. It doesn't actually progress the story. It leaves us basically the same place that the show left us, but with some added moments with these characters. And I say, so be it. I had so much fun watching this going, oh God, I remember what I loved about this show. I remembered that I loved, like Devendra said, how smart this show is, how it is a show about methodology.
Yes.
It is a show about the process of stuff, of thinking through a plan and setting it in motion and the A to B to figure it out. And almost always in the show, that was about Walter White doing that. And now we have an entire movie where we get Jesse Pinkman as the one who's going through process, thinking things through, going, this is an A to B, B to C, C to D movie. And it's so cool watching, okay, if I want to get this done, I need to do this. Well, if I need to do that, I need to do that beforehand. And before I do that, I definitely have to do this. And that's what this movie is. And I find that to be so satisfying, that process of there. It's like a video game, I guess, you know, to solve the puzzle, you're going to need to do, you know, yeah, you want to get the key to the castle. Okay, well, the guy who holds the key has four quests that you need to finish before you can get the key. That's kind of how this movie plays out. Like, there's a thing that he has to do to get another thing that he has to do to get another thing. And I find it so fun to go on that ride, to see how the problems are solved, to be inside that experience. And then you also get the wonderful nostalgia of characters and actors that I haven't seen play these parts in 6 or 7 years, all just sort of naturally show up again as these characters. And it makes me realize, oh my God, the world was so much better in 2013, or at least I was blithely unaware of how bad the world was. And, it, you know, in this pre-Trumpian world where I could just sort of enjoy a dark story without feeling like it, you know, was about the real world in any singular way. I don't know. I really, really liked revisiting the Breaking Bad world, revisiting these characters, revisiting the kinds of stories that that show told. But I also don't feel like, to answer your question, I don't think it really progressed any. It is an unessential but very enjoyable chapter in this universe.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. Inessential is one word that comes to mind, because it's not like, oh my gosh, there's something that happens in this that's so important that you must watch it, or it's so exceptionally well done.
Anything.
Yeah. That being said, I do think that one of the downsides of the Breaking Bad finale was that it did give short shrift to Jesse Pinkman as a character.
I think that whole final season kind of did, honestly.
Yeah. It did give short shrift to that character. And this movie is almost a way of retroactively correcting the sins of the past. It's like, hey, we acknowledge that this character, Jesse Pinkman, who is in virtually every episode of Breaking Bad, right? Or many, many episodes of Breaking Bad, a beloved character, one of the top three characters of Breaking Bad, which is arguably one of the best TV shows of all time, that we did not necessarily do him the greatest honor in the final season of the show, nor in the series finale of the show. And this is a way of like going back and like correcting that. And that's kind of amazing, because like it would be one thing if the Jesse Pinkman storyline ended in an extremely satisfying fashion, right? I thought it was a solid ending for Jesse Pinkman at the end of season 5 of Breaking Bad, or season 5 part 2 of Breaking Bad. It wasn't a terrible ending, but it was like, it just really feels like there was a lot more there that we didn't see, and this movie shows you what that is. So I think it is best described as an epilogue, I think you use the word epilogue, right, Devendra? Like, it's an epilogue to Breaking Bad the series. And I think if this episode had come out after the series finale, like a week after the series finale, and had been the true series finale, that would have been completely fine. You know, like that it would have worked as the actual series finale.
In fact, I think that the movie is indicative of a creator, Vince Gilligan, who has these characters in his mind so well that all of the minutiae of 6 years ago is still matters, is still vibrant. Like, I found myself, I was obsessive about that show, but I haven't thought about it or, you know, watched any episodes in, you know, 6 years. This movie certainly rewards people that have watched it much more recently or are very well familiar with all of the tiny details of where everything was left, because this movie doesn't pretend to catch you up on anything, but it definitely references tons of established minutiae. And I kind of love it for that, you know?
Well, yeah, it's a movie that you should definitely not watch if you haven't seen Breaking Bad. I mean, right. It's not a movie that will be enjoyable.
It's not the Firefly movie, which you're not getting that reference, Dave, but yeah. You could watch the Firefly movie.
Dave has seen Serenity, as I recall. Yeah.
No, yeah. I've seen the first scene of Serenity, which is pretty good.
Your answer always changes, Dave. Like the origins of the Joker in The Dark Knight, Dave's situation with Firefly is an amorphous thing. Yes. Yeah.
But another way of putting it, Jeff, is it punishes you for not watching Breaking Bad recently.
Yes.
I did a recap podcast about Breaking Bad. I analyzed every episode, did a commentary of Ozymandias with Rian Johnson. But I have not revisited that show in a really long time. And I watched recap videos on YouTube to like catch myself up. And even I still like missed a bunch of the, there was some stuff that I was like, I think I'm supposed to know more about this situation than I do right now. Right. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That definitely happened a few times during the course of the film.
I think there's like one particular reference that they made very clear in the movie that I didn't quite remember. It is funny that this movie has no clips from the actual show because Sony is apparently stingy as hell. So yeah, that's funny, I guess.
There's certainly scenes that feel like it's like, well, did they shoot this and just not use it? Or did they actually bring these people back? Which is fun. Like, I love not knowing that.
Someone in the chat room was also commenting on how like Netflix didn't get the rights. All I was saying is that they were able to make a movie in the Breaking Bad universe and brand it as a Breaking Bad movie. Like, it's not called El Camino, period, nothing else. It's called El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, and it is on Netflix, and I believe it's branded as a Netflix film. It's just fascinating that we live in a world that this can exist, and I'm actually happy. We've seen mixed success.
Yeah. This never goes well. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it never goes well. I would say like Downton Abbey, the movie that's out in theaters right now, is a massive success. I mean, that is a huge win for everyone involved in that film. There was a Veronica Mars movie. I didn't see that. I wasn't a fan of that show, but Devendra, like, how'd that go?
It went.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, so there's
Arrested Development.
Yeah. Arrested Development. That. Was there a movie Arrested Development though?
No, but just kind of like coming back to something after years of not being there, you know, picking it up.
I wasn't talking about like reboots in general necessarily. I mean, movies based off of TV shows, right?
Twin Peaks is another example.
Yeah. Again, not a movie, but
well,
yes.
Firewalk with me.
Yes.
That was a comeback. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, and
did the X-Files do that? Make a movie?
X-Files, I think, is a great example. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I watched, I think, both of those. How many X-Files movies were there? I think there were two, right? Is Fight the Future and what was the other one? The fact that I can't even remember it is a sign that I didn't think. Oh, I Want to Believe. That came out in 2008. X-Files, I Want to Believe.
I'm really conflating that and then like the new episodes, and then some of the new episodes are good. So, yes, two movies. Yeah.
So I think
you know what actually is the first example of this?
What is that?
Star Trek.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Star Trek 1, right? Yeah.
Star Trek the movie.
The motion picture, yeah.
Yes, is exactly this. And it worked.
Did it?
Did it? Absolutely it did. It completely revitalized that. I mean, we talk about Star Trek.
It helped us get Wrath of Khan. How about that?
Well, it helped us get Next Generation and God knows what else. You know, everything.
This movie stars, you know, Aaron Paul as Jesse Pinkman, who is recovering from a lot of challenging situations that he's been through that we didn't even see in the course of Breaking Bad. Yeah. And you know what I was thinking of, Devendra, that could have helped Jesse Pinkman out in challenging situations? Our sponsor for today, Feels. You want to tell people about Feels?
Yes. Feels is a premium CBD service that gets delivered right to your doorstep. And I feel like Jesse could have used this. He kind of came out of that whole torture situation pretty badly, kind of sweating, kind of freaking out. And I found CBD and Feels CBD in particular to be really helpful during anxious times in my life, like when I have a big deadline looming, when I have to go to the airport. It helps me naturally reduce stress, anxiety, and sleeplessness. I really appreciate that. Like every airport trip now, I take a bit of Feels, and it helps everything. Airport lines, delays. I don't care as much. I'm able to just like go along with the experience. It's super easy to take. You just put a few drops under your tongue, kind of hold it there for a bit. I think what's really interesting about Feels is that they give you a lot of support, right? So they have a free CBD hotline that you could call and text message to ask questions. And that's better than you'd find at compared to like the CBD bottles at the bodega or something. CBD is everywhere right now, but finding good stuff and real stuff is kind of hard. So Feels kind of helps out with that quite a bit. It helps you feel better naturally. There's no high, hangover, or addiction. And the best part of Feels is that it's a membership, right? So you get it delivered to your door, you set it up to go every month, and you'll save money in every order. You can pause or cancel at any time. So I'll say, you know, Feels has me feeling pretty great, and I'm really glad to have it around. You can become a member today by going to feels.com/filmcast, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/filmcast to become a member and get a 50% discount automatically taken off with your first order with free shipping. feals.com/filmcast.
Thanks to Feels for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. I have a question for you, Jeff Cannata. Is, like, have you been watching Better Call Saul? I don't think you have, right?
Much to my shame, okay. I watched the first season, and then second season, I got away from me. I premiered at a weird time, and it got away from me. And then I haven't done it. And
I'll be honest, Jeff, yeah, that kind of happened to me too. But then I caught up, and it was really worth it. So
yeah, I loved it, and I think part of it is that my wife never watched the original Breaking Bad, and so she wasn't sort of in like I was, and we just didn't start watching Better Call Saul together. And I don't know, it's one of those things where we're just out of sync, out of rhythm somehow. I got to catch up on that show, man.
Yes. Can I make an oblique reference to something that happens in the most recent season? Or sure, will that?
Sure. Yeah, so, no, go ahead.
I'll just say that in the most recent season, there is like a brilliant subplot that occurs in the most recent season of Better Call Saul, where they basically explain the origin of something that you took for granted in Breaking Bad, right? I mean, can I say what it is, Jeff, or do you care? Like,
I'll take my earphones out.
Okay. Okay. Just take your earphones out for like 10 seconds. But basically, like, they explain the origin of the meth lab, Gus Fring's meth lab in Breaking Bad, a meth lab that took, I think, 30 seconds of on-screen time to destroy. They spend, many episodes explaining the meticulous construction of this thing. And it's that kind of mentality that, like if that sounds exciting and awesome to you, then I think you'll really love Better Call Saul. You'll like El Camino. You obviously are probably a fan of Breaking Bad. I can also see people finding that to be extremely up its own ass. You know, like that they might think that, oh, like, who gives a shit, like, where that thing came from? And that's a completely understandable attitude. But I think one of the great things that Jeff indicated about Breaking Bad and about El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, is that it's all about methodology. It's about process. It's about problem solving. It's about how do you get from point A to point B, and what are the 18 steps I need to take to get to that point? And it does so with a lot of style and great cinematography and really smart dialogue that feels very authentic, and awesome performances. And if that's what you're looking for in El Camino, I think you won't be disappointed. Overall, mm-hmm, I had a great experience with this film. You know, let me ask you guys about this thing called the concept of fan service, right? Because I think that fan service is often used as a pejorative, and it's often seen as lazy, right? Like, hey, we're giving fans what they want, and because we know what fans want, it's super easy to do. And so fan service is often like, when you hear the term fan service, it's referred to negatively.
I use that for the finale because that's how it kind of left me feeling.
While I would describe El Camino as fan service-y, I still enjoyed watching it. You know, it wasn't like there was a lot of fans, like a lot of characters come back. We won't give away who until spoilers, but like a lot of characters come back from Breaking Bad, or at least are referenced from Breaking Bad. And it did feel fan service-y at times, but is it just like the fan service was executed super well, or just that I liked being in this world so much that I didn't care if it wasn't executed super well? Jeff Cannata, do you have an opinion on the fan service?
I think that it's a little of both. I think that it was executed yeah. well. It didn't feel gratuitous. It didn't feel pandering, which those things can sometimes feel. It wasn't, you know, we shoved Boba Fett in here because you loved Boba Fett so much. It felt like every character that showed up had a real genuine reason to be back or be, you know, relevant to this tale that was being told. Or there were moments that were being filled in from the past. I mean, I think this movie, the thing that I found so most surprising about this movie is how much it is flashback of things filling in moments from when the series was actually on, which I thought was a really interesting move. I didn't expect that to happen. So it does that, but it doesn't feel gratuitous. But also, it's kind of what I said in my limerick, where like I kind of don't care because I'm just having so much fun hanging out with these people again and being back in this world again. And because it's done well again, I'm a fan and you're servicing me. This is great. I'm here. I'm doing it. Let's do it.
I have a couple of qualms with the movie. One of which I can just mention real quickly before we get to spoilers for the film. And the other one, we'll have to wait for spoilers. But I think the only time where I really felt like I can see the seams of what's happening here is without giving too much away about El Camino, it does create a new villain character, right? And I'm kind of like, oh, I see, like this new villain character who presumably was like this villain character came to like was a significant part of the Breaking Bad universe at the time of Breaking Bad, but we just never met that character, right? In the timeline of Breaking Bad. And I was kind of like, okay, like I understand why you're doing this movie, you know, because I think you need to have some kind of tension there. You need to have some kind of plot arc there that involves a villain character, that involves a villain character potentially or not getting vanquished. But that was the thing where I'm like, oh, you know, that did feel just ever so slightly contrived to me. Do you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, without revealing anything about who the identity of this villain is, like, do you guys know who I'm talking about? And, like, what did you make of that?
I kind of don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
I'm struggling to understand. Maybe it's because I didn't have
that. Is this vague enough? Yes.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then.
I think there's a few possibilities I have in my head, but I kind of don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Well, then maybe we should get the spoilers and talk about it there. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
I will just say one last thing, you know, which is that like the entire creative team from Breaking Bad came back for this, right?
Yeah.
So written and directed by Vince Gilligan, the music sounds the same. The look is the same. There is like...
I won't say the look is the same because actually... This is being presented on Netflix in Dolby Vision and everything.
It has
an extra pop. Like there is a nice pop to the desert scenes, like contrast that we didn't quite get even with the AMC stuff.
No, that's fair enough. I assume none of you had a chance to watch this in the theater though, right?
No.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen it, but I mean, I think it looks great. And Dave Porter does the music. It sounds similar to the, you know, there's all the kind of filmmaking trademarks that we've come to recognize from and appreciate from Breaking Bad.
Unique camera angles, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
going
unique
on,
camera
yeah.
angles, time lapse, right?
Yeah,
montage sequences of people doing things. You know, it's just like all that stuff that we love from Breaking Bad, and that actually is still present in Better Call Saul. Jeff Cannata is present in this film.
One of the things that I do, you kind of referenced this slightly earlier. I love the fact that nobody made a big deal that they were making this. You know, there was no big announcement like we're revisiting the Breaking Bad universe. We're getting so and so and so and so together again or whatever. Like it's not, there was no, it just like this thing that arrived that you, like you said, we didn't know we wanted. And I kind of love that. I love that.
Yeah. I think it's great. It's just like, wow, it's here. And, they shot it in secret. Like it was only like, I think it was Bob Odenkirk gave away the film's existence a while ago. It's like, oh, we've been shooting the secret Breaking Bad. They're shooting the secret Breaking Bad movie. And
it's a secret. I said it
at the time. I didn't believe him. You know, I was just like, oh, okay. I wonder if I'm ever going to see that. Like, is that a thing? Like, is that like Topher Grace's like Phantom Menace edit where like it's people talk about it, but you never see it. You know what I mean? It's like not possible to actually even watch it. You know, who knows? Who knows? But then it arrived fully formed. Everyone can stream it. I think that is pretty amazing. So, and the fact that you can watch it and that it like it in many ways looks and feels similar to Breaking Bad, the show. It's great. There are some things that don't look similar to the show. For instance, like Devendra, you mentioned, you know, the technology is now a lot better. Also, like the opening and closing credits, I thought were like that's just not in the style of Breaking Bad. I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's like the thing you're gonna ding it there. Yeah,
I'm not dinging it. I'm just noting that it's like, huh, like interesting choice there.
Yes, different.
Let me just say one last thing before we get to spoilers for this movie, which is, Jeff, I actually do think it's a real shame you're not watching Better Call Saul, because I would argue that Better Call Saul is a show more suited to your tastes than Breaking Bad is.
I know, yeah. David. Yeah. I should be. I know it's. you're killing me here.
Okay, well, this is the last time.
It is hard to watch things with kids, Dave. Like that's the main thing. It is so much harder now.
There's only so many things I can watch.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure like at least three seasons of this show happened before Jeff even had kids. So you should at least be caught up to like season three if everything was going correctly. But
if Dave's math is correct, yes.
I very much enjoyed season one. And then I can't even explain to you what happened, but there was something where like it debuted at a time I was out of town. Something weird happened. I fell behind. And then it was like, okay, well, now I'm going to have to binge. And my wife, I'm going to blame my wife. I'm just going to blame my wife. It's her fault. I do want to watch it. It's one of those ones that's always in the back of my head of like, oh, I got to watch that.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty great. And it also is pretty remarkable that, yeah, this show spawned a spinoff series that is markedly different than Breaking Bad. And then this epilogue movie, definitely not something I would have seen coming as something that would spawn from the show. But yeah, Jeff, watching Better Call Saul is something you got to take care of. Just like you have to take care of your body as well, which is something that our third sponsor for today, Native, can help you with, right?
Oh my gosh, that segue, David, that segue, it did not stink. And you know what? You shouldn't stink either. That's why you should be using Native. That's the deodorant that I've been using lately. Native is a safe, simple, effective product that people use in the bathroom every day. Using trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Are you convinced? Are you not convinced? Well, maybe you should check out the 8,000 five-star reviews from Native customers. Or you can talk to me about it, because I've been using Native as my deodorant, which is formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. It's filled with ingredients that are found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, tapioca starch. And they never test on animals, which is important to me. And they have free shipping and returns. The best news is it works. I really enjoy my Native deodorant. The other thing that's wonderful is they have really fun scents. I've used both the coconut and vanilla, which is their most popular scent, which smells delicious. And the one I just got is the cucumber and mint, which I didn't know what to expect, quite frankly, with cucumber and mint as a deodorant. It is delightful. I just got it, just started using it. My wife was like, ooh, what is that? I was like, that's cucumber and mint. And she's like, what? And I was like, no, really, seriously, it's cucumber and mint. Smell. She's like, it is delightful. And they got a whole variety of other scents. They have eucalyptus and mint, lavender and rose. And there's no risk to try it. They give you free returns and exchanges in the USA. I got to admit, I have switched over to Native as my deodorant. It just makes me feel good. Just makes it better. And we'll help you out. If you want to give it a try, and there's no reason why you shouldn't, we'll give you 20% off your first purchase. All you got to do is visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code FILMCAST during checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com and the promo code FILMCAST when you check out. Please don't forget that. It'll get you 20% off.
Your first purchase. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, try it. Give it a shot. I think you'll like it. You know, deodorant is a very personal thing, and this is a huge upgrade for my life. So I think you'll dig it. NativeDeodorant.com and that promo code FILMCAST.
Thanks to Native for sponsoring this episode. Let's get the spoilers for El Camino starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming?
No.
But you won't find it because, of course...
You're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
All right, so in terms of the villain character, the guy I was thinking of was the welder from the candy company or whatever.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say they turn him into a villain. Yeah, I didn't feel like it was like the villain.
Have we seen them before, by the way? Like, candy just seems significant to Jesse.
That's what I'm saying is I don't, like, this movie had to invent an entire backstory where, like, this guy kind of helped to screw Jesse over, well, right?
Not just the guy, but Candy itself. Like, was Candy part of the thing before? Like, I just don't remember.
I don't believe that we've ever, if we've ever seen the candy truck before, I don't think we've ever met that character before.
Gotcha.
So it had to basically be like, hey, like, this other, like, okay, all the white supremacists are dead, but this other guy also pissed Jesse off, and Jesse now needs to take him out, potentially.
Yeah. These welders.
These welders. Who, and it, like, as if to be like, hey, you know, you didn't already think these people were total pieces of shit. They use their money to, like, hire these prostitutes, and it's like, presumably treat them very poorly because you see them being very, like, not happy when they leave the place. So that's the only time in the movie where I was like, okay, movie, I kind of see what you're doing. You need to, like, craft this character out of nothing and make him a villain character. But, you know, it's all done very well. I love the whole showdown that they had. I kind of,
Let's just talk about the showdown again, by the way, because I feel like that was probably the action highlight,
yes,
of the movie, and it is staged so well. Like, it reminds me of, like, a freaking Sergio Leone film where it's like Jesse just, like, walks in and everyone shuts up and they see the gun, and it's just like, it is framed like everybody's in a perfectly positioned spot in the frame. Like, great use of widescreen. The show always did that, but I'm very glad to see it, like, continuing here. And what a damn great shootout. That's all. Yeah, like, I love the surprise of it is fantastic.
I love the moment where the dude shoots, like, six times before hitting anything. It's like, I feel like that'd be so realistic, you know, yes, like these movies where it's like bang, bang, and they're both hit. It feels like, no, these idiots would be shooting wildly and missing mostly. It's great.
And the thing Jesse I enjoyed watching, like, the old time. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The thing I enjoyed watching about that last scene is, in the background, there's all this glass that, like, falls down, like, this broken glass falls down at strategic points during the shoot. And I'm just, like, imagining on the set, there's literally a dude whose job it is to make that glass fall down during the take.
Yeah.
And then, like, crumple, reset it. And it's just like, wow, like, they must have put a lot of work into that glass in the background. So I really appreciated that. But so I enjoyed that guy as a villain. Great actor. Right. And so I thought that was good. But the other thing that I kind of am, this is the thing that I was like, I need to wait until spoilers to talk to you guys about this to see if, like, this is a problem. Right. Which, you know, Jeff, it sounded like you're kind of in the tank for this film, and that's fine. Cause I'm kind of in the tank as well, and that's fine. But one of the things that I thought is interesting to reflect on is, what is Jesse's arc, both during the series of Breaking Bad and also during this film? And there was an article I read by Abigail Nussbaum, who's one of my favorite writers. She wrote a review of El Camino for lawyersgunsmoneyblog.com. And here's what she writes about Jesse Pinkman, which, like, you may or may not disagree. You probably disagree, but, like, I felt part of this rang true to me. She writes, quote, "The farther I get from Breaking Bad, the easier it is for me to see that Jesse was less an innocent victim, less an innocent or a victim, as he was weak-willed. And that the reason he seemed redeemable to the audience was not so much any trait of his own as the fact that he was standing next to people who were so much worse, at one point actual Nazis. Even when Jesse finally realizes how much Walt has hurt him and tries to strike back, he is so ineffective and so self-absorbed that all he achieves is to get Hank and his partner killed and Jesse captured and tortured by the aforementioned Nazis. And unlike Mike's ignominious end, Jesse's failure to achieve anything substantial feels more like the show forgetting about him than scrambling to give him something resembling a decisive ending. Then scrambling to give him something resembling a decisive ending rather than a meaningful statement about his character." So Anyway, that's the quote. Yes. Sorry, I kind of read it correctly. Yeah, yeah. It basically is like, huh? Like when you think about it, what was Jesse's arc in Breaking
Jesse
Bad?
Jesse was kind of just there for Walt always to feel better than somebody. Like that. That's kind of how I felt throughout the series.
I
like
think
he
there's
had his
a redemption.
Moments.
He has a redemption arc.
Well, he kind of does, but I feel like in this movie, certainly, like seeing him deal with things on his own, figure out things on his own, it is sort of like, you know, the kid going to college for first time, except this time you've just escaped being imprisoned by Nazis. So it's Jesse Pinkman, like trying to put the pieces of his life back together on his own, taking kind of what he learned from Walt, but also trying to come to terms with himself too. So yes, if this movie serves that purpose alone, I think it's worth it.
My very favorite scene of this entire movie is the scene with Robert Forster in the vacuum.
Oh man.
It is so great.
Also RIP. RIP. Like yeah. this movie premiered the day his death was announced.
Yeah, so sad. So he's sad. Amazing. The scene is amazing. The fact that the scene is in the movie is amazing. Like of course how brilliant is it that Jesse thinks the way all of us think, which is like, if I had just gotten on that in that van,
yeah,
none of this would have happened. And so of course he's going to be like, I'm going to go find how to get in that van now. I love the logic behind that. The talk about fan service. That's like, it's like the opposite of fan blue balls, you know.
It's like fan devotion. I feel like that's the entire movie, right? Because yes, you cannot watch this movie if you haven't seen Breaking Bad. This movie will do kind of nothing for you. It will make no sense. But rather than fan service, it is actually I feel like giving fans something that they kind of deserve more. I guess it's not just fan service.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many wonderful moments in this movie, but that. The length and the sort of calm of that scene, the fact that Gilligan lets it play out at length, and we just kind of sit in that store with them.
Right.
It's so wonderful.
And by the way, like that is exactly why you cast Robert Forster too, right? Yeah. Just the cool guy,
the calm,
guy. He could do something, right? But it's not worth the effort. He's just cool. He's in control of the situation.
Yeah.
Man, what a legend.
And all the Jesse Plemons stuff in the movie is great too. Just the sort of casual psychopath of Todd, you know, that like it is so chilling how Plemons plays him as this matter of fact, you know, unfazed by the horror of his world. You know, it is so great. And just seeing Jesse have to step through all of that, it's like,
Oh man. He is the anti-Anton Chigurh, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Couple things. I mean, Jeff, you said, hey, he does have a redemption arc. I mean, the only redemption arc I can see, right, is that basically Jesse allows himself to become enslaved in Breaking Bad, the show, in order to spare this kid, right? Andrea's kid, Brock, I believe is his name, right? And so it was nice that this,
because he's never saved anybody.
Right. And it's nice that this movie actually acknowledges Brock in some way at the end with the letter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of what you see as his redemption is like, he's in some way sparing Brock, right?
His arc is he goes through losing anybody he has any connection with because of the actions he's chosen, because the people he's chosen to ally himself with and the actions he's chosen to take. He loses those people. They all die around him. And then by the end, he realizes none of it was worth it. Human beings are more important than money. And he's going to save one of them. He's going to save one of them if he has to go through hell to do it. And he does.
So that's his arc from Breaking Bad. And I think that's not unconvincing what you just said. So like, what is his arc from this movie? You know what I mean? Like, because there's this moment in the movie when he's at the Jesse Plemons' house, Todd's house, and the fake police break in, right? And he's holding one of them hostage, and he kind of has this flashback, right? Where mm-hmm. he's like, oh man, like, I gotta let this guy go. I can't shoot this guy who he thinks is a cop. And that's like, I almost thought like, what is this moment trying to tell me, right? Is that Jesse is still like the recognizable person that he is. He won't allow innocence to be slaughtered in so far as he can control the situation. And so that's why he like lets the cop go and like gives himself up. But then that's completely undercut by the fact that, hey, they're fake cops. Right.
Yeah.
So then, and then I guess like, so then at that moment, he's like, okay, like, fuck these guys. I'm going to go like confront them and possibly murder them, which is what ends up happening. And so is that kind of the heroic arc? He's like, hey, I used to value human life and now I don't anymore. Like what do you feel like Jesse's arc is in this film? If there is, if it is said that he can have one, right?
He didn't show up to kill them.
Correct.
He showed up to take a very small amount of money. And, you know, I would have issue with your characterization of those events. I don't think it was undercut by them being fake cops. I think it was a sad twist of fate that he chose to exercise his humanity to people who are undeserving of it.
Yeah.
But it was further proof that he is, you know, he has broke good, right?
Yes.
You know, and so he's now not the guy that's going to do these kinds of things. Then he realizes the only way to get to Alaska, which this movie sort of establishes as like Chekhov's non-contiguous state. You know, it's like it hangs Alaska out there for the very, very beginning of the movie as like something. It's very funny. Non-contiguous, I guess is what I meant to say. I take issue with you saying that, he decided to go kill them and then that somehow is his arc. I don't think he decided to go kill them. I think he decided to, do what it took to get himself out of the situation, and they made the decision to push him to kill them.
Yeah. But I guess like you could also read that as like he is now like learning to stand up for himself. You know what I mean? At least I think that's what I'm supposed to interpret it as. I don't know is what I'm trying to say is like I don't know what his arc is supposed to be in this film.
It's funny that the end of Breaking Bad, the series, was him driving off in a car to parts unknown. And the end of this movie is him driving off in a car to parts unknown. You know, it really does feel like just an extension rather than a new resolution of some kind.
Yeah. But I guess now he's not escaping like certain doom. It's more like he has a path. Right. Like he has kind of a destination or something. He has a goal that he's working towards and he's just not running for his life, I guess.
Yeah. But I agree with you that I don't know. It does give some kind of closure to his arc. That's the thing that I really like about this movie is you do get that closure. You do understand a little bit more about what happened to him afterwards, because it was a little bit implausible that he would just be okay afterwards, right? Because obviously the carnage that happened at that Nazi place.
Breaking Bad doing Nazis before it was cool. You know what I mean?
we haven't talked about all the cameos that happened in this movie.
So many cameos.
We got Mike.
I was genuinely moved, by the way, by the Badger and Skinny Pete thing. Yeah, like the friendship, the bromance. It made me tear up.
You know what's crazy though is the teaser trailer for El Camino was a scene of Skinny Pete being interrogated by police officers, which like you theoretically actually occurs during the course of the events of this film, but you don't actually see it in the movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Because they're going to come to his house and ask him what happened to your friend and all that. Yeah,
and they detain him, and it's like this is a thing where like the teaser trailer actually can assist you with your knowledge of the events of the film.
Cool.
So a good example, Jeff, of I'm not saying you should have watched it before, but I'm saying you can definitely watch it afterwards because it's basically like a deleted scene from the film.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
I thought that was kind of.
I mean, maybe it was a deleted scene from the film.
It's very possible. And I never watched that teaser trailer because obviously Jeff, you and I in general don't watch teasers, but it's a great way of introducing the idea of a Breaking Bad film. Like I don't even think you see Jesse or you know, Aaron Paul in that teaser trailer. So it's a great kind of piece of marketing.
I was genuinely shocked by the Walter White moment. Like the way it plays, them walking toward the camera.
Even though we kind of knew it was coming, it is introduced in a really, shocking way.
I popped like a mark, man. I mean, this is a character who's dead, and I get a chance to hang out with him a little more. Yeah I mean, it's like magic. It's cool.
And you kind of get a little bit more about their relationship together. You see Kristen Ritter comes back in a scene that happens before.
That was surprising, because she is in a much bigger career path now than she was during Breaking Bad. So nice to see her back.
And you guys have already mentioned Jonathan Banks appears as Spike Ehrmantraut again. I think those are all the big cameos. I don't think Bob Odenkirk was in this movie, right?
He was not.
I don't remember seeing him. Yeah.
It's just funny that if he was the one that spoiled the fact that it was being made.
Somebody's a little defensive.
Maybe he was in an earlier cut of the film. It is honestly weird to me that he's not, even just for cross promotional purposes. Like, it would seem like a good marketing.
Well, in the future, right? He is at a Cinnabon in Idaho or something, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
How could it really work?
Well, because the movie flashback a bunch of times, you know, so it's you could have flashed back to a time when they interacted with Bob Odenkirk again. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they already felt like they had everything they could.
I feel all the cameos were essential in some way. Right. They either gave us a new layer of Jesse's life, even the Robert Forster thing, where that guy was his guardian angel at one point. That guy could have saved him from all this misery. So it is kind of fitting that he comes back.
Even old Joe makes a reappearance.
Yes, old Joe, the head of
the
junkyard, right? Yeah. And it's great that LoJack was the thing that set off the initial sequence of events in the movie. Yeah, but that is classic Breaking Bad, right? It's hey, I mean, that one felt a little bit self-imposed. Did they really need to give themselves that obstacle of the LoJack? But it's certainly very plausible. My favorite moment from the movie, though, was actually when he and Aaron Paul and Jesse Plemons are in the desert together, and he reaches for the gun, and Todd has to convince him to give him the gun. It's a heartbreaking scene, because basically Jesse Pinkman is getting taunted by near freedom at almost all times that he's with these people, and being unable to seize it kind of adds to the torture. He's basically like Reek in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
At this point, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Kendall Roy from Succession in season 2. You know, basically just a tortured character that's completely subjugated. And that was probably the moment I was most affected by. Plus, you know, that combined with the amazing cinematography out in the middle of this stunning, you know, scenic view that they're in. It's a heartbreaking moment for me. So.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked enough about Aaron Paul's performance. And I think, you know, he was always great in Breaking Bad, but I feel like there's a level of maturity he's bringing to this performance now, too, because it is Jesse suffering from PTSD. It is Jesse trying to reclaim his life. He's had a couple projects. He was in that cult show on Hulu, which was all right. But I don't know, a wiser, older Aaron Paul kind of giving us Jesse Pinkman again. I don't know. I wouldn't say he couldn't do this 6 years ago, but I think there's something more to his performance now that I really appreciated. He's
grown as an actor, you know, in the last 7 years.
Yeah.
And I think he does a great job here. It's a completely convincing performance. So, All right. Any other thoughts on El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie? I think overall, it sounds like we all enjoyed it, even though it wasn't hey, go rush out and see this, you know? But if you are a Breaking Bad fan, I think you will like El Camino.
I'm very glad it exists. Yeah,
you will be glad to take the trip. And
for sure.
There's so many great sequences. I actually really like the searching the entire Todd's apartment sequence.
Yes,
that top down composite shot of him in all the different compartments of the house.
Yeah, amazing.
So cool.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. So anyway, well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Slash Filmcast. You can find more episodes at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, Jeff Cannata, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about this show and thinking about Vince Gilligan and imagining his process of staying in this world with these characters that he invented. And I don't mean to compare myself to the genius of Vince Gilligan.
But that's precisely what you're about to do.
Well, yeah. I just
can allow relate, me to.
I can relate in a very small way with the Dungeons and Dragons show that I'm doing, because I don't ever want it to end. I love it so much, and these characters, these situations, this world is in my head all the time, and I love it. I love thinking about cool connections and fun things that can come back and resurface. And this is my version of storytelling, and I would love people that have only heard me talk about other people's stories to check out a story that I'm weaving with a really talented group of creators and actors over on The Dungeon Run, which is the Dungeons & Dragons show I do. You can find it on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can listen to it as an audio podcast. It's actually really great as an all audio show as well. You can find that anywhere you get podcasts by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can watch it live every Wednesday night when we record at 6 p.m. Pacific time on caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. I also do a video game podcast called DLC, which you can find at 5by5.tv/DLC.
How about you, Devendra?
Or you can find me on Twitter at Devendra, and I write about tech at engadget.com. We're also restarting the podcast there, so go ahead and check that out at your favorite podcast client.
Find me on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chensky. I also host another show called Culturally Relevant. You can find that at Apple Podcasts or wherever your podcasts are downloaded. Next week, folks, I think it's going to be Parasite. I think it's going to be Bong Joon-ho's Parasite.
I'm scared.
One of the best per theater averages. Apparently show after show in New York City was sold out this weekend.
It was ridiculous. Let me tell you, I tried to get into this to see this movie. I think around 30 screenings at the IFC Center were sold out. Insanity.
That's crazy. I'm looking. Hopefully, we will get in to see the movie. I'm actually not like. Let's put it this way: we will review Parasite if we get in to see it.
It is going wider, so yeah. We'll see.
It will be out in Seattle on October 25th, so theoretically, it'll be in time for the show. But that's assuming I can actually get in. So we will see. So hopefully, Parasite will be our review next week. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.